This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. Hi, I'm Jack Nerad, and thanks for being with us. Our usual co-host, Chris Teague, can't be with us today. So the show will be a little bit different. Instead of having one special guest, we're going to bring you two. Kristen Kolodge is the expert on advanced technologies for auto research firm J.D. Power, and she and I will be talking about the prospects for automotive vehicles in light of the COVID crisis. She has a lot of interesting things to say about that. Will it boost automated vehicles, or will it detract? We'll chat about that at some length. Our other special guest is a friend of ours, a friend of the program. Her name is Lauren Fix. She is known across the nation as the car coach, among other things. She's a certified mechanic, and she'll be sharing the ideas for taking care of your car as we exit summer and head into fall. That's one of the many things she does. But before we do that, here's some of the latest automotive news from around the globe. That's what we try to bring you here on America on the Road. So let's get to it. The Grand Wagoneer is coming back. Many of us who have a few miles on us ourselves remember the Grand Wagoneer, a Jeep vehicle, kind of the prelude, I think, to many of the SUVs out there. It's going to be coming back first in a concept form, but we are sure we will see a production version of it soon after. Rooted deeply in Jeep heritage, as you would guess. The Wagoneer was around a long time, actually. The first one was a Wagoneer in 1962. Then the Grand Wagoneer, obviously grander than the Wagoneer itself, came along in 1984. It had unheard-of standard features in an SUV. It really was one of the first of what we would call the current era of SUVs, very leading edge. That and the Range Rover probably were cutting-edge vehicles in very different ways. The new Wagoneer is said to deliver capable, innovative, and authentic vehicles with premium design cues. This is how corporations talk about their vehicles. They're going to look like Jeeps, but they're going to be kind of cool. And from the concepts we've seen, a little out there. And I think a concept should be a little bit out there, a little bit different than what you would expect. They didn't trace around an old Grand Wagoneer, which is to their credit, and I think that will be interesting. Fiat Chrysler says it will be packed with ultra-premium leading-edge features and technology, and at the same time will exude American craftsmanship. So I think we're going to see great interiors from the Grand Wagoneers when they come our way as production vehicles. The exterior design is really interesting. It has a lot of Jeep design features. At the same time, there's some differences to it, and it kind of is in some ways retro and in some ways very, very leading edge. It's one of those vehicles that you can't classify precisely, and I think that'll be interesting for it. They say it's a modern expression of the original premium SUV, which kind of makes sense. A bow to modernity is the sustainable materials that are going to be throughout the interior. I think we're going to see stuff like real cloth, not stuff made out of fossil fuels as interior treatments. It has the concept itself has an electric vehicle powertrain. So that would be interesting. Electric really lends itself to four-wheel drive vehicles when you think about it, because there's so much torque from each electric motor that is available right away. So that should work. And you can put if you wanted to, you could put an electric motor at each wheel and have it drive the vehicle that way. So we expect it to be very interesting, fun to drive on the road, certainly have the off-road performance that a Jeep would have. And we're really looking forward to both Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer production vehicles when they come from Metro Detroit. That's where they will be built next year. So look for that. Look for this concept vehicle. We wish there were some auto shows where you could go to see it, but that is not the case. But look for Grand Wagoneer and Wagoneer coming, because certainly Jeep is Fiat Chrysler's premier brand these days, as doing a yeoman job of supporting that company and doing interesting things for them. And Jeeps are very, very popular, more popular than ever before. Another brand, of course, that's very popular is Volkswagen. Volkswagen, through the COVID days, has been talking about some of its heritage vehicles, and we'll give you a little information about that. One of the vehicles they're talking about, and I think they're trying to tie this into their newfound desire to do SUVs and those types of vehicles, is the Iltis. This was a sport utility vehicle, kind of like the Tiguan and the Atlas, kind of. When Volkswagen was doing World Rally Championship, Rallycross, Pikes Peak, and the, of course, the Dakar Rally, these were not produced in huge numbers, that's for certain. Most people have never heard of the Volkswagen Iltis. But it was started as a vehicle for the German Army. It went into production in 1978. It was built by Audi at Ingolstadt. And civilian vehicles based on this, it sounds like Jeep, doesn't it? Began in 1979, and they built 9,000 of these, so a lot fewer than of the number of Jeeps that were built. And it was branded as a Volkswagen, but it was developed by Audi. So go figure on that. But that did happen. And we're going to see more vehicles, including a smaller SUV from Volkswagen, coming very soon. We've heard more than hints about that, so look for that. There are results from a new J.D. Power study, this about multimedia quality and satisfaction. Of course, infotainment systems are notorious dissatisfiers in cars, and full of bugs, apparently, or full of problems for people. Upgradability and software updates are able to keep these systems relevant and problem-free, if that actually happens. And it could happen over the air, but they can create more problems and a big source of dissatisfaction. This is according to J.D. Power, so good and bad. Owner satisfaction actually dropped a giant number, 173 index points. This is on a 1,000-point scale. So that's a big drop, and that happens when there are over-the-air update problems, and it seems to keep happening. So headaches from that, but also good things. There are good-performing vehicles in each segment, and we will name them for you that have multimedia systems that people seem to like. In the midsize large segment, the Dodge Challenger is the winner. Uconnect from Chrysler is just terrific. It works really, really well. The BMW X6 is the winner in the top ranking in the midsize large premium category. In the small compact category, the Nissan Sentra, which we endorse and have talked about on a recent program, is top dog. And then in the small compact premium segment, the Genesis G70 was the top dog there. So a lot to like about those vehicles, not so much to like about infotainment systems and over-the-air fixes for them. Hopefully they'll get that sorted out, because that is the way to make fixes if we can figure out how to do it. So those are the pieces of news that are out there this week. Like I say, this is a bit of a different program in that Chris Teague is not with us, so we're not going to discuss vehicles that we've driven this week. Instead, I'm going to bring you two interviews that we've done recently. The first of which is with Kristen Kolodge. She is an expert on autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles at J.D. Power. She's written a white paper on this and done a study about how COVID can affect the development of these vehicles. So when we come back, we'll be speaking with Kristen Kolodge of J.D. Power. I'm Jack Nered, and stay with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nered back with you, and we have a special guest for you talking about a really interesting subject. She's an interesting person, of course. Her name is Kristen Kolodge. She is Executive Director of Driver Interaction and Human-Machine Interface Research at J.D. Power. not just human machine interface, but human machine interface research at J.D. Power. Thanks so much for being with us, Kristen.
Hi, Jack. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, among other things, among many other things, COVID-19, this coronavirus, has changed things when it comes to automated vehicles. I participate in an ongoing study that you coordinate and run for J.D. Power. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about that, and then we can dive into your thoughts on automated vehicles.
Absolutely. So at J.D. Power, we've been looking at the consumer interest, readiness, excitement level regarding new types of mobility solutions that the industry is working really hard on. And those are automated vehicles. So this is the level of vehicle where the vehicle can drive without a human presence. So in our industry speak, that would be like a level 4 or level 5 type of capability. So we've been studying that. And we've also been looking at consumer interest and excitement level and purchase consideration for battery electric vehicles. So that would be a vehicle that solely runs on a battery alone, no hybrid, no gasoline type of backup version. So we've been running this study for the last roughly 18 months and looking at it on a quarterly basis. Again, we want to see how is that trend and sentiment changing over time. Again, as the industry is working so hard on these issues and bringing them to market, we want to see if that consumer sentiment is tracking along with the industry progress.
Well, it's kind of interesting as I watch these closely and I contribute to it. There really doesn't seem to be much change, right? I mean, it seems kind of glacial in terms of change regarding both of these technologies over the course of the study so far.
Well, I like the word that you use. Certainly those in the industry that are bringing these technologies and solutions to market would not necessarily appreciate it. But what you stated is absolutely true. The consumer sentiment for battery electric vehicles has really been stagnant, you know, kind of in this take it or leave it type of sentiment. And for the self-driving vehicles, the automated vehicles, consumer sentiment is really in a negative territory and hasn't budged hardly at all. I mean, we judge our numbers by an index, and it's really remained, for the most part, unchanged over the course of that last 18 months. And so, you know, we haven't necessarily, as an industry, convinced that consumer population to get more excited, to have more trust, and certainly to have that level of interest in riding in or purchasing this type of mobility solution.
And then comes the coronavirus, which may or may not change things, but I think there's some indications that it could change things. Talk a bit about that, and I know you've written a white paper on it as well. What you think it might do in terms of moving automated vehicles forward?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, certainly some pros and cons to the situation with automated vehicles that certainly can change the equation going forward. So talking about on the plus side, one of the solutions that we've been studying with consumers for automated vehicles is, you know, would you be interested in having an automated vehicle deliver goods or services to you? You know, would you be interested in having, you know, an automated vehicle in commercial transit, so like your semi-trucks on the road, all the way down to like a personal ownership type of model? But it's really that delivery of goods and services that seems to have them, you know, a great level of potential that of applicability that consumers didn't necessarily foresee that type of solution previously. So think about the grocery delivery, if you needed to have your medicine delivered during this time of COVID, having that contactless delivery to your door certainly has much more application and real life value today than it did pre-March. And so that's certainly one of the upsides that we see for automated delivery. to be able to come to the forefront and have that type of application going forward.
Right. And it seems like the last mile is the maybe a point that automated, some kind of automated delivery, and it might even be a drone rather than a typical car or, you know, a car-like vehicle does that delivery. But that kind of contactless, I think all of us are getting packages now and wondering every time we pick up a package from the doorstep, are we bringing disease into our homes? And that gives us a little bit more peace of mind, I guess, about that, if it's not coming with a human hand on it.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, even, you know, even just that concept of what you've talked about, you know, that presents a new opportunity for us going forward, right? You know, what can we do to provide that level of assurance? But certainly just having that type of delivery model where, you know, less hands theoretically have touched that type of package and whatever is being delivered helps that perception of safety in the consumer's mind.
Right. You know, in thinking about this as I prepared for the interview, I think you certainly see both sides of this coin, right? I mean, there are the positives about it. We have also seen a lot of people very wary of any kind of public transportation. And I would suggest maybe even wary of automated public transportation if that were available, just because of who might have been in the vehicle before they got in, right? That kind of thing. Can you talk about those attitudes and those thoughts a little bit?
Right. So, I mean, anything dealing with the public transportation, I mean, we haven't gotten out of the woods yet where we need to have that type of social distancing, where we need to have that assurance for cleanliness. And so we've, you know, in this United States market for sure seen that hesitation and that reluctance and even that mobility shift to other forms of transportation as a result. So, you know, thinking about automated vehicles going forward, if they're in that type of public transportation domain, the challenge is how can we maintain that level of social distancing to other people that we do not know that are considered strangers on that same public transportation ride? And then also, how do we provide that assurance of cleanliness and safety? There are so many touch surfaces within any type of transportation vehicle that we have today. So how do you provide that level of assurance to consumers?
Right, right. Well, one thing that one always has to be wary about is making long-term plans based on short-term information, right? And in the short term, and we hope it's in the short term, we're facing a pandemic and we're facing what we're facing in terms of possible infection. But theoretically, at least, this will pass and we'll enter a new era. I think on the retail side, we're seeing a retail automotive side, we're seeing a lot of dealerships switch to online selling. And that's a trend that I think will, you know, bear fruit even when the pandemic is over. What's your take on how this impetus toward automated vehicles will weather this storm, because it's certainly a storm to the car companies in terms of revenues, and then manifest itself going forward?
Well, the, you know, underlying principle throughout all of this is that people are still going to need to move, right? So we need to come up with solutions that provide for that ability. The opportunity in the state that we're in now is looking at this white space situation where consumer requirements are changing, right? That's those elements of what's going to be useful for me as a consumer, what's safe. And again, these types of definitions change over time. And so while we're in a bit of a peak, if you will, regarding the situation for contactless and cleanliness, et cetera, what is going to happen long term, we don't necessarily have that crystal ball. But as an industry, we need to be able to shift and to adjust to that demand. But the point will remain that people will still need to move. So we need to be able to, you know, such as the dealer retail model that you mentioned, think creatively and come up with solutions that ultimately the consumer is going to deem useful in the end, right? Those are going to be the technologies and solutions that really are sticky, that will have that lasting impact. And, you know, if it's born out of this COVID pandemic, but makes people's lives better, that certainly is the ultimate situation that we're looking for.
What is your prediction? Do you think that, certainly car companies are affected negatively by this in terms of overall revenues, and thus where they allocate the money is even more important than it was before. And maybe they're looking at less long-term and more short-term kind of fixes. What's your prediction about investment in automated research going forward over the next couple of years?
Talking about the U.S. market, certainly we're in a different period now than we were 2 months ago, when the manufacturing plants were idled at that point in time due to COVID. So at least now we have those manufacturing plants up and running. Most of the dealerships are back open and able to sell vehicles. So the dire situation that we were in 2 months ago regarding, this business model where money was going out and being spent, but the industry didn't really have the revenue model coming in, that at least is getting back to slightly more normalcy, granted not at the volume that anyone was anticipating for the year 2020, but certainly it's a better situation than we were in 2 months ago. So going forward, though, the element is, from a business model, is still on being able to get back to basics, generate the revenue, and some of the research and development money that was being attributed to automated vehicle development may need to be postponed. So we've seen some companies start to make some adjustments to their projected timetables when they would have products available, shifting that by roughly a year. But we've seen other companies, so let's call it, a company that is not an OEM today, but they are specifically focused on automated vehicle development as their sole product. We've seen many of those companies looking to double down, right? This is their model. They're starting to, see this element of new business applications for their solution. And again, they're starting to see where consumers are appreciating that type of mobility solution, and they're looking to get to market faster. So there's a bit of a dichotomy going on depending on which side of the market that you're in, whether you're that traditional OEM today versus someone that is completely focused on automated vehicles. I know, while it's certainly not the same market, we've definitely seen much more of an advancement in the China market regarding automated vehicles, and many of those companies really doubling down, frankly, on their research and development, expediency type of testing, number of products that are out there on the road, and just the emphasis on getting speed to market, much more so coming out of the COVID crisis in their market. So it's interesting to see even just, where the couple months that they are, frankly, ahead of the United States market and coming out of this COVID crisis, where their emphasis is.
Interesting. Yeah, it strikes me that we're seeing vehicles now in North American market, at least, that are some level two vehicles, maybe some that are touching on maybe level three level of automation, but certainly nothing remotely beyond that. And nothing that I see quickly over the horizon that will get there. Is level five kind of a bridge too far, do you think? Or is that something we will see in some kind of reasonable time frame?
Well, I think the last few words that you just stated, that reasonable time frame, that's the element that certainly has the most variability in answers, depending on who you are talking to.
And what's reasonable, right?
Exactly. So looking at the, you kind of have this this image, if you will, of automated vehicles in general. But once you start to take that down to the next level of parsing it out to different types of applications of automated vehicles, so whether it's a personally owned automated vehicle, that's the model that we see having the longest type of time frame. I mean, we're talking 10 plus years out as our experts are telling us in our research. If you look at an automated vehicle that might be delivering groceries to you, so it doesn't have a driver in it, it doesn't really look like a vehicle, it's more of that very short distance, very much a geofence controlled area. We see where, you know, companies have that type of technology out there now and in very limited markets, but it is in a public domain at this point. So that's a space where you can start to see a potential for that time frame much sooner in application. So very much it's still a range depending on that type of application for self-driving vehicles.
Yeah, it strikes me that over-the-road trucks, you know, big semis might also be fertile ground for this, especially because I think you can, those companies that operate those vehicles can invest more in the technology than an individual person is going to invest in their car's technology. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree that I see that as a very ripe area of opportunity going forward. It's a different business model altogether when you have fleet owners and, you know, drivers that have a different level of training than does a typical consumer that, you know, runs through their local DMV or Secretary of State to get their licensing, right? The commercial truck driver has much, you know, that it's a more tightly contained space to be able to train for the capabilities of what that automated vehicle can do, and certainly be able to look at the business ramifications that are quite positive that can come from allowing that type of transportation model to stay on the road longer than a human driver could. And so that's where, you know, we've definitely seen quite a bit of movement with a number of automated vehicle companies that are in that commercial space really, really making some headway here, you know, frankly, even in this 2020 time period, even during the COVID process.
Right. Have you spent much time in automated vehicles? I've been lucky enough to have been in a few that were at least level 3 and maybe bordering on level 4 under controlled circumstances, of course. Have you spent much time in them?
I have, yes. It's been, I'm an engineer by trade, so this is very much like a playground to me, which, you know, may or may not be the right words to use, but it's really exciting to be able to see that type of process. And for me, as a researcher, I'm very interested to even watch others' reaction regarding their first ride in an automated vehicle and how that pendulum of trust, right, that, you know, maybe going from an emotion of skepticism or fear or just wariness right before they step into that vehicle to watching their, you know, how attentive they are to what's going on. And then, in many cases, a level of comfort coming through that experience as they see the vehicle's capability and see, you know, somewhat of a humanistic driving experience that places that unrest at ease. So I have had that experience. We actually participated with the University of Michigan. They had a driverless shuttle on their campus for an 18-month research process. So I've spent a lot of time in that shuttle. And so watching how the public on the campus, so that would have been faculty, staff, students, riding that type of transportation. And that was considered a level 4 capable shuttle.
Got it. What do you think the biggest hurdles are to getting to full automation? Are they regulatory? Are they engineering? Are there particular aspects of driving that are very difficult to conquer? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say, you know, first and foremost, there's a level of technical feasibility, but quite closely followed behind is this consumer acceptance of the technology. I mean, we still, you know, as we started out this conversation today, we see that level of consumer reluctance and in some cases a questioning by the consumers of why are we even talking about this type of technology. They're not necessarily seeing the potential for safety benefits or the potential for affordability, and even, you know, just this ultimate lack of trust in that type of technology. And so really making sure that as we develop this type of mobility model going forward, that we have consumers that are ready, waiting, you know, willing to accept this technology when it does come to market is going to be an important factor, right? We want to make sure that we have that base there that is going to be excited to use the product when it does become available.
And there's a little bit of chicken and egg in that, isn't there? I mean, for instance, a smartphone. Nobody was demanding a smartphone until suddenly we had it. And then we go, wow, that really works great. I love that, but I could have never envisioned that. What are your thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree more, right? So this is where we're having the consumer involved in this development process is going to be a critical stage to be able to help create the most optimized product when it comes to market, right? Being able to take their input through this iterative design process, that's going to be the ultimate level. Because with automated vehicles, it is such a foreign concept. I mean, if you just talk about automated vehicles to someone, we all have different levels of degrees of what we're envisioning. So having that experience with the product, kind of like your last question that you asked, that's where you start to bring more reality versus what you were thinking the experience might be like. So having that type of experience, having that consumer input regarding their wants, needs, you know, product feedback on that in that early iterative process, that's going to create the most optimized product in the end.
What more would you like to add? Are there things that I should have asked that I haven't, or you think listeners should know?
I mean, to me, I think that this COVID experience that we're going through, you know, when we come out on the other side, I think we are going to find that new mobility experiences and new opportunities were, you know, new products that we didn't dream of pre-COVID came about and, you know, ultimately will be making our lives better as we move forward. So I do think that this is a prime opportunity for the industry to really react to these new consumer requirements that are coming about, some which may be short-term, some which may be long-term, and really ultimately create products that are, you know, improve consumers' lives in the end.
Well, perfect. I think that's a good way to leave it. Well, Kristen Kolodge, thanks so much for being with us from J.D. Power, talking about automated vehicles and a little bit about electrics, too. Maybe we can talk about that next time we speak. Thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate the time.
And that was Kristen Kolodge of J.D. Power talking about automated vehicles and what our future might look like on the road. Thanks so much to her, and stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. I'm Jack Nierad. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nierad back with you, and it is car care time, isn't it? I guess it's always car care time, but as we're in the middle of summer and we're out back driving again, it's time to think about your car, and with us is an expert on that. Her name is Lauren Fix, old friend of mine, former president of the North American Car of the Year jury and the car coach, not just a car coach, but Lauren is the car coach. Lauren, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Jack. Yeah, we go back a long way. We've done a lot of things in cars our lives, but it's good to have friends. And, you know, we all talk about these great cars that we drive. You know, you and I have literally driven everything on every continent. And it's kind of nice to think about, oh, yeah, all these great new cars. But most people are keeping their cars on average like 14 years. And, you know, so it's a good, you got to take care of them, because if you don't, they don't last that long.
Right. And it's not expensive to take care of them. And it, you know, it is so cost effective. Let our listeners know about some ways that they can go about doing that.
All right. Well, one of the things I always tell people, especially if your car's been sitting with COVID, everyone's been like not driving, not going anywhere, but now we're starting to get out and about again. first thing you want to think about is the lifeblood of your engine. No matter whether you're driving diesel or gas or a hybrid, you definitely think about the fluids, and there's 9 fluids in a car, but the most important one is your engine oil, because if the engine's not running, it doesn't make a difference if your power steering is working or not. So I always tell people, you'd be surprised that even the littlest high performance, you know, high fuel economy or high performance engine uses full synthetic oil. So whether you're talking about like a little Kia Rio or you're talking about a Shelby Mustang, they both run full synthetic. So when you go to get your oil change, make sure to get the right oil in the right intervals. And you can get that information in your owner's manual. And that in the back is a service schedule, will tell you how often. So it's not based on time, it's based on mileage. I know you know this, Jack, so, but your listeners should know that there's different kinds of oils, and you want to get something that's full synthetic, not a mix. Pennzoil has a platinum full synthetic oil. One of the things I liked about it versus the other ones, and I've used them all over the over time, is that Pennzoil uses natural gas to produce their synthetic oil. So what you get is an unbeatable, complete engine protection. I think that's most important because you want to protect your engine. You know, we all hear about that Volvo that has a million miles on it. Well, because they use full synthetic oil. But if you're not going to use it, you're going to use regular traditional oil, you're hauling a trailer, a boat, you've got an RV, and it calls for regular oil, you want to get a really good premium oil. And the Shell Rotella oil really is one of the best ones on the market because it's designed for that stop and go traffic at the idle leg when you're hauling something.
Your engine oil is so inexpensive compared to the repair of an engine that you're really well advised to use a premium oil, to use a synthetic even a conventional oil, but use a premium one. Use a name brand, as you say, Lauren, versus, you know, something cheap you'd pick up off the shelf. It just makes sense overall.
Right. And I think one of the other things that's interesting is most people don't change their own oil. You pop the hood on a new vehicle and you see this big piece of plastic that basically says, don't touch me. So I think people get concerned. So if you don't want to do it yourself, that's fine. There's lots of places to get your oil changed. Always ask for what you want. But one of the things to save some money, because I know everyone's looking to save a few bucks, Pep Boys has partnered with Shell, and they've got this deal that you can get 30% off the Pennzoil oil change, the platinum that we were talking about, the full synthetic, or $30 off the Rotella oil change. And then they also have a $30 summer prep package, which does all the things that you kind of need to do before you hit the road, which is tires and alignment. Of course, you want to put a fuel system cleaner and check the air conditioning, which could be a big issue. On top of that, your brakes. They're going to look at all those things and replace your wiper blades. And that's the whole thing. And one thing they'll also give you is a voucher in case you don't have road service and you need to be towed somewhere. Something happens, because it always happens when you don't plan it. They'll take you to one of the 1,000 Pep Boys around the country. All their technicians are ASE. I'm an ASE certified tech as well. And those are the guys you want, the gals and guys that you want to work on your vehicle.
Absolutely. I think a lot of more people are going to hit the road these days in their own cars. A lot of people are avoiding airplanes it's hard to stay socially distanced. So if you're going to be doing some traveling, I think a lot of people will be in their cars. What are some of the things people should think about as they prepare for that summer trip they're going to take by car this year?
Right. If you have a new vehicle or you've got a vehicle that's older, you've done the maintenance, maybe you took it someplace and had it done, and you should be checking your tire pressure once a month. So in my phone, I have a little notification the first of every month that says check your tire pressure. I recommend a digital tire pressure gauge, and you use the number that's inside your driver's door. And if you haven't seen it, many people haven't, next time you get in your vehicle, open the driver's door, take a second, and look for that sticker that's inside your driver's door. That's the correct tire pressure for your vehicle. So you check your tires, and when you look at them in the morning when they're cold, check those tires. You can actually look at the tread. You don't have to be an expert. I know, Jack, you and I are used to doing this, but a lot of people aren't. And if you see it unevenly worn, or you see a nail in the tire or a bubble on the sidewall, you're going to need new tires. I'm recommending a tire that comes with a road hazard coverage. And I found this Hercules Road Tour 855 tire. It has an 85,000-mile warranty, which is the longest in the industry. It comes with road hazard coverage, and you get to use it for 45 days. So that's pretty good. So up to 45 days, you use it and go, I like this tire. It's quiet. You know, it's an all season. It's good for, you know, most climates. And it gives you a chance to really get comfortable with, they call it the strong silent type. So you can get it at your favorite tire store.
And that's really what you want. Tires are so good that I think a lot of these days, that I think a lot of people just totally neglect them. And they don't need a lot of care, but as you say, they do need a little bit of care. And tire inflation pressure is probably the key thing. And then just take a look at them, eyeball them. You know, are there cuts in the sidewall? You know, is the tread, as you say, wearing evenly or unevenly? If it's uneven, well, that's pointing
that's not
to
good.
Some other problems that you might want to deal with. But, you know, getting a good tire, especially with some kind of guarantee, seems like a really good plan.
I know, people don't think about that. So when you get receipts from anything, whether you get a new battery or tires, this is my little car coach tip. Take those receipts and put them into a folder so that if you need them for whatever reason, a battery dies, a tire has a road hazard issue, you can pull it right out. So I actually take each folder and label it with the year, make, and model of the car so I can go back and reference it.
Well, it's also useful for warranty purposes. You know, if your car is still under warranty or if you have an extended warranty, one of the things you typically have to prove is that you're doing regular maintenance and doing the things you should do with your vehicle. So if you keep a record of everything you do with your vehicle, that's going to be helpful in that instance. And it's also going to be helpful when you go to sell the car and you can prove to that person who's going to buy it, hey, I took care of this thing. And look, I got new tires somewhere down the road and et cetera, et cetera.
I do the same thing. I think it's really smart. I mean, I think one of the good things about that is when you buy a car that's used and you have the type of documentation, people are really impressed and they're more likely to buy it for your asking price.
Right, right. Anything else? We're talking with Lauren Fix. She is the car coach about what you should do to prepare your car for summer driving. Anything else you'd like to point out, Lauren?
Yeah, one of the times people say, you know, do I need a new vehicle? I always say, if you're not sure if you need a new vehicle, here's the rule of thumb. And this is just something you should keep in your head. If the repair is substantially more than the value of the vehicle, it's time to get a new vehicle. There are really great deals out there, even though there are less vehicles on the lots. Dealers still want to get rid of these cars. So don't forget to shop online, shop your local dealers. And I always put up all the incentives the first of every month. You can go to my website, which is carcoachreports.com, because we give you car smarts.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to be car smart. That is certainly true. It's an interesting market, isn't it? I mean, we lost, you know, maybe three months of car production. Dealers lost a lot of sales. Sales just went over the cliff about mid-March through mid-April and actually have recovered pretty well. But it's been quite a tumultuous time, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it's terrible because really the sales that were lost were, 17 million? Now we're looking at approximately 12 million. So somewhere around 5 million vehicle sales lost. And that may not seem like a lot, but what happens is the dealers aren't getting that money. The manufacturers aren't getting that money. They're not producing as much cars. That impacts jobs. It impacts the economy. You know, and so this is something that also means that if you're looking at a 2020 vehicle and you want a specific make or color, you may not be able to get it.
Right.
So I think that there's going to be deals. There aren't some incentives. Just be really careful of the deferred payments. That's my favorite one. Oh, we have deferred payments. You know, if you don't pay for it now, you're going to pay for it later. So just keep that in mind. I mean, one of the things people don't think about is, okay, well, I don't have to pay for 3 months. Well, don't worry. They added that to the backside. And if they didn't extend the term, they raised the price to make up the difference.
Yeah, deferred payments are kind of a multi-edged sword, not even a double-edged sword. A lot of people are concerned about their employment, and you know maybe they shouldn't be buying a new car in the first place if they're that concerned. But a lot of times, if you don't crank up the payments right when the deferment ends, you get charged interest on all that deferred time. And so that's a little added bonus for the finance company and or the seller of the vehicle. So that's something to pay attention to. At the same time, there are really great deals now, maybe not quite as great as they were in April and May, but great deals on new cars. And the used car market is also heating up. What's your take on a used car these days?
Right now, about each month, there's about 1 million cars coming off of lease. So that's a lot of vehicles. So if you're thinking about a certified pre-owned, that might be very wise because you're getting is a vehicle that has 3 years of usage on it, but then you're also able to, you know, get a good deal. I mean, and so you want to buy, my tip on certified pre-owns is if you're looking at an Acura, get it at an Acura dealership. Don't try to get a certified pre-owned Ford at, you know, a GM dealer because it's not going to be the same thing. So when you get it from that brand, what you get is the ability for them to extend the warranty if needed. They can also go through any sort of recalls, technical service bulletins, and take care of all that before you get the vehicle. I think you're getting a better deal that way, and they're a little more negotiable.
Yeah, I mean, you're pointing out something very, very important. You really, if you're buying a certified pre-owned car, you want it to be certified by the manufacturer of that car. You don't want to, anybody can certify a car. You and I can come out with our own brands, the Lauren Fix brand of certified cars. Maybe that's your next enterprise, Lauren.
Oh, Lord, I don't know if I want to do that. It's a lot of liability.
But, you know, that can happen. But, you know, I'm not saying you'd go out of business, but those who are certifying who are not manufacturers are maybe somewhat less likely to be around when you actually need them. The manufacturer will almost certainly be around. So look to that from a certified used car. And at the same time, you're going to probably get lower financing rates than you would get from buying a typical used car because maybe those finance rates will be subsidized by the car manufacturer. So that peace of mind of the warranty, a well-inspected car that is certified by the manufacturer, that's a pretty darn good substitute for a new car, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of people don't realize this, but if you look at it from a financial standpoint, your best bet is always to get a certified pre-owned vehicle. I mean, I like to get new vehicles. It's just because we drive new vehicles all the time. But I think if you're going to keep it for a long time, just keep in mind the leasing versus buying. Don't get caught up in this. We'll do a loan for you. We'll extend it for 7-8 years. That's a real big mistake. So you have to be careful that if you're going to purchase a car, don't go any longer than 5 years. And if you're going to lease, it's never recommended to go beyond 36 months. And I've seen 48-month leases. The problem is you're outside the warranty because typically, depending on the brand, 3 or 36,000 miles is pretty standard, unless it's Hyundai or Kia, 10 or 100,000 miles. But if you're outside that window and something goes wrong, that's on you, and even if it's on a lease, and that could be expensive. So be very careful on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really bad news to have to fix a car that you're never going to own, right? That you don't own. And you never will own. So that's a word to the wise.
Yeah, and be careful of those extended warranties. There's tons of companies out there that offer them. Most of them, you've got to read that small print. My rule is, with the big print giveth, the small print taketh away. So kind of look at that, because it may say the work doesn't get done at that dealer, or the work gets done by one of their dealers, or there's some deductible, or it doesn't cover quite a few things. So be really careful, and you got to read that stuff. Most extended warranties are not worth it.
And you have a long time to consider an extended warranty, too. And by that, I mean you have the regular warranty period, which often is 3 years, 36,000 miles or more. You don't have to buy, you know, you're looking to buy essentially insurance coverage on something that's going to happen at least 3 years from now. And heaven knows, most of our lives change pretty radically over the course of 3 years, especially car-wise.
Right, and you never know, so you want to be prepared. That's why I always tell people, you know, if you're going to purchase the car, that's great, but keep in mind, you know, if watch what's going on with maintenance. You know, if something changes in your life, the first thing you want to do is reach out to that bank or that lender and say, hey, you know, I can't make the payments, something changed, and they'll work with you. So especially with COVID going on, I see a lot of manufacturers happy to sit down and talk to you, credit unions or your local bank. So don't put yourself in that ugly word of repossession. Try to be proactive.
Right. We're speaking with Lauren Fix, the car coach, and we're so glad to have her on the show. I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball, Lauren. What do you think the second half of the year is going to be like from a sales point of view, from a vehicle introductory point of view? I mean, this is new territory. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I've been talking to a lot of the manufacturers. Most of them are not going to do any launches the way we used to do launches, where you and I would see each other at an event. We'd go through a presentation for, you know, one evening and the next morning and then drive for the day and leave. Wherever that might be on the planet, there's not going to be any international travel for sure. There's going to be a lot of introductions. If they're going to do it in person, it all depends on this COVID and what happens. And of course, you nor I can read a crystal ball for that. But I think manufacturers are shifting their new designs or new changes. For example, we're going to change this color or change the style or do a complete redo. They're moving them to 2021 models, and they're going to continue working through the summer because typically they shut down. They do the tooling swaps. You're hearing most of the manufacturers are working right through the summer because they already had their downtime. They just had it at the wrong time. And they're going to continue producing vehicles. I think sales will pop back up on the ladder, probably the fourth quarter. But I think once people get back to work and whatever their new normal is, you know, whether it be working from home or getting back in the office, a lot of people are going to be spending money. Some people see out on unemployment, they made more money than they did working. And those people are going to say, you know what? time to buy that pickup truck. It's time to buy that SUV. There's some great deals out there. So I think sales will come back. I don't think it'll be what it was last year, but I think we're going to see some good deals, some good incentives. And when 2021 rolls around, we're going to have even more exciting vehicles that have been delayed.
Right, right. Well, the interesting thing, a couple interesting things, I guess. One is sales have recovered pretty radically already. I mean, they're not to the level that they were before COVID-19, but they've actually recovered probably much more than most people would figure. Now it might be inventory of new vehicles, because we lost all that production over the course of 2 or 3 months. That is right. The limiting factor. As you say, sales are going to be well down from the 17 million new car sales that we saw last year. But it really wouldn't surprise me if they came in at around 14 million or something like that. Maybe
that wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah,
that would be good.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see whether that happens or not. And you and I are both members of the North American Car of the Year jury. You were president of the organization for several years, and I'm now serving as vice president. We're seeing a lot of vehicles being introduced this year that we're going to have to drive in a fairly short period of time so we can do the evaluations. There are a lot of introductions this year. We're just not getting behind the wheel of them yet.
It's going to be crazy. I have vehicles being delivered here every week, so I've got a chance to drive the new Supra, the Genesis G90. We get to see all the new vehicles. I think we're going to have a very busy, in October we do our first final drive before we decide which vehicles are going to be the finalist for the North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year. So I think we're going to be really busy, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look forward to being busy because, you know, doing car reporting out of your home office gets to be a little...
Not the same.
Yeah, not quite the same at all. Well, Lauren Fix, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it. Thanks for the great car tips, as we can expect from the car coach. We appreciate you joining us here on America on the Road.
Thanks a lot for having me, Jack.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. I'm Jack Nierad. That was our interview with Lauren Fix, the car coach. Car care tips for 2020 into 2021. Thanks so much for being with us on this special edition of America on the Road. We miss Chris Teague. We expect him to be back next week, and please look for that. So join us again right here next week for America on the Road. I'm Jack Nierad. Thanks for being with us.